Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. High drama for the nation's high court today. A new Chief Justice, John Roberts, sworn in. And this morning, President Bush nominating Harriet Myers to be the next Supreme Court Justice in the critical swing vote seat of retiring Justice Sandra Day O'Connor. Myers was at the president's side in the Oval Office as he unveiled his second nominee for the court in less than 3 months.
This morning, I'm proud to announce that I'm nominating Harriet Ellen Myers to serve as Associate Justice of the Supreme Court. For the past 5 years, Harriet Myers has served in critical roles in our nation's government, including one of the most important legal positions in the country, White House Counsel. She has devoted her life to the rule of law and the cause of justice. She will be an outstanding addition to the Supreme Court of the United States.
Then the nominee introduced herself to the nation with the slenderest of indications of her own leanings.
It is the responsibility of every generation to be true to the founders' vision of the proper role of the courts in our society. If confirmed, I recognize that I will have a tremendous responsibility to keep our judicial system strong and to help ensure that the courts meet their obligations to strictly apply the laws and the Constitution.
The 60-year-old Texas native is White House counsel and has served as the president's staff secretary and earlier his personal attorney. She put herself through school and earned a law degree from Southern Methodist University. Her professional career, as described by the president this morning, has been one of firsts. She was the first woman hired by an old Dallas law firm, the first woman president of the Texas State Bar Association, the first female president of the Dallas Bar. Harriet Myers has never served as a judge, like the late Chief Justice William Rehnquist at his ascension to the court. If confirmed, she will succeed Sandra Day O'Connor, the key swing vote in a court known for closely fought 5-4 decisions. Democrats warned even before today's announcement that this nominee would not breeze through confirmation like John Roberts, who today begins his first day on the job as Chief Justice. Conservative Republicans are looking for assurance that the new nominee will swing their way. This hour on Point, we're talking about the president's brand new Supreme Court nominee, Harriet Myers, and the shape of a new era on the High Court. You can join the conversation. What is your first reaction to the nomination of Harriet Myers? And how will you judge the nominee with no record as a judge? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We begin this hour with reaction in Washington. Charles Babington is congressional reporter for The Washington Post. He covered the Roberts confirmation hearings for the Supreme Court and joins us now from Washington. Charles, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
So here we are. Tricky moment for the president on many sides. And here's his nominee, Harriet Myers. What are you hearing in Washington as the minutes tick past since his announcement?
What we're hearing is that she's largely a blank slate, and depending on sort of your point of view, that either gives you some comfort or not much comfort. It's interesting that this time some very conservative groups, at least in the very initial reaction, seemed somewhat disturbed. Already some groups, such as Concerned Women for America, which is a very conservative group, have come out with some sharp criticisms of Harriet Myers. They seem not to be reassured by anything that they know about her and concerned about the things that they don't know. And I think the other reaction you're hearing in general is that, and perhaps this is no surprise, she doesn't have the type of credentials that John Roberts does, you know, hardly anyone does, because his credentials were quite remarkable. So I think that's going to be she might have a little bit of difficulty, standing in comparison to him. But one thing I will note quickly is that the Senate Minority Leader, the top Democrat, Harry Reid of Nevada, sent out a statement that said, "I like Harriet Myers," and he didn't say anything critical of her. So that certainly is something that she'll take comfort in.
She has been described as a close confidant of the president's for many years. He has described her as a pit bull in size 6 shoes. What's the instant analysis there? And this will unfold, we know, Charles Babington, but what's the instant analysis of why this nominee by this president now?
Well, I think you make a good point. This is a president who values loyalty, given and received, and you see that throughout his career, quite a number of people that he knew in Texas and that were in part of his gubernatorial administration there have moved on up and up and up. And you know, Karen Hughes, Alberto Gonzalez, Karl Rove, and Harriet Myers is another example. Probably the first big job that she did for him when he was governor was take over the state lottery, which had a lot of problems at the time, and she got high marks for that. So here is someone that did it, you know, got a chance at a state government level, reportedly did a good job, and a few years later she's nominated for the Supreme Court. So he really values loyalty and the people that he knows and feels comfortable with.
She was general counsel for his transition team as he moved into the Texas governorship in 1994, as you say, put at the head of the Texas State Lottery Commission, and then came to Washington with the president in 2001 as staff secretary. What does that person do, Charles?
Not a very glorious job, I guess. It's a busy job. That person looks at all the paperwork that goes across the president's desk. So I would imagine that it includes everything from very important and difficult issues to probably some more mundane issues. But she has a reputation for working very hard and working very long hours. And obviously, they were quite satisfied with the job she did there. And when Alberto Gonzalez went to become Attorney General, she got the job of White House Counsel, which is a very big job.
And what about Alberto Gonzalez? The president said he'd like to see a Hispanic on the court. There was a lot of anticipation that it could go that way, others on the short list as well. But what about him and that nomination that took it away?
Well, Tom, in fairness, this is mostly speculation on my part and other people's part, but I think two things probably worked against him. One, there was a lot of desire to put another woman on the court because Sandra Day O'Connor is the position that's being vacated here, and she was the only Republican-nominated woman on the court. Mm. So there was a desire to do that, and I think the other thing is Alberto Gonzalez did get a lot of criticism from very conservative groups. They felt that he was not sufficiently conservative. How much that played into the president's decision, I don't know. But the fact of the matter is that the person who was nominated, Harriet Myers, does not have enough of a record for, at least for now, for those types of criticisms to be made, because there's just not enough information out there about her.
You covered the John Roberts confirmation hearings and all the politics around that. How do you see the politics shaping up around this? You've already described conservatives as expressing alarm this morning, and Harry Reid, at the head of the Democrats, not. So how is this likely to play out, Charles?
It's really quite confusing, but I got to say, if Harry Reid is indicative of how other Democrats in the Senate are going to go, then that augurs very well for Harriet Myers, because the truth is conservatives can complain a lot, and they can cause a lot of discomfort within the Republican Party. But at the end of the day, there's 55 Republicans in the 100-member Senate. How many of them are going to vote against a nominee by George W. Bush? This is someone, despite his problems, is still highly regarded by the great, great majority of Republicans in the Congress. And so if you get even a handful of Democrats coming on board, or at least not fighting hard, I just think that makes it a really tough scenario for blocking this nomination.
Mm. Charles Babington, congressional correspondent for The Washington Post. Charles, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
Joining us now from Washington, Mark Tushnet, professor of constitutional law at Georgetown University. Mr. Tushnet, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
And from South Bend, Indiana, Amy Barrett, professor of law at Notre Dame, where her scholarship includes coverage of the federal courts and civil procedure. Amy Barrett, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Amy, first to you. You clerked for Justice Scalia, as I understand. There's a conservative justice. What do you make of the nomination of Harriet Myers?
You know, at this point, I'm not sure what to make. It's somewhat of a surprise, although her name has been floated around in the last week. But from, you know, what we know so far, I have no reason to be concerned about it. She's certainly an accomplished lawyer and held important positions in the government.
But, you know, competence at some point is not all that many conservatives want. They want a shift in that 5-4 vote that Sandra Day O'Connor kept in a kind of moderate zone. Do you see that shift coming that conservatives have long sought on the court with this nomination?
Well, it's impossible to say at this point. I don't think it's a problem that Harriet Myers doesn't have judicial experience, because there have been many nominees to the court, many justices who have not had it. However, because she doesn't have a judicial record, it's impossible to say at this point whether she would shift the court or not.
Mark Tushnet, a stealth nominee here then? How do you interpret what the president's offering?
Well, it's certainly true that we have no idea what her views are on important constitutional issues. If that's what it means to be a stealth nominee, then she's a stealth nominee. I suppose the reason for choosing her is in some ways exactly that. The president is not in the strongest political position that he could be in. He, in some sense, used up his best chance with John Roberts. And now needs someone to get through who won't be costly politically.
And do you, how do you see the president's moment on that front? Has he chosen a kind of mild profiled nominee here because he's at a difficult political moment, which he seems to be?
I assume that that's why he's chosen Ms. Myers as the nominee. Whether that strategy will succeed will be something that we'll have to see. This is a situation in which already there's been some expression of concern, as you've heard, from some conservative groups who don't see her as a justice in the mold of Scully and Thomas, as they believe the president promised. It could be a situation in which Democrats sort of sit back and let Republicans push the issue of whether she is the kind of person they want on the court. We just don't know at this point.
It's going to be a very interesting nomination to watch move forward. Amy Barrett at Notre Dame and Mark Tushnet at Georgetown, please stand by. We're talking this hour about the president's brand new Supreme Court nominee, Harriet Myers, and day one of a new era on the high court with John Roberts moving in to the Chief Justice seat there. You can join the conversation. What is your first reaction, your gut reaction, to the nomination of Harriet Myers? And what will it mean to swap swing voter Sandra Day O'Connor for Harriet Ellen Myers? 1-800-423-8255 is the number. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the president's brand new Supreme Court nominee, Harriet Myers. You can join the conversation. What do you think? Will this be the confirmation battle royal that John Roberts was not? Conservative listeners, are you getting your woman on the court? Did Roberts do it for you? Does Harriet Myers do it for you? Liberal listeners, is it to the Ramparts time or not? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've been talking with Amy Barrett at Notre Dame and Mark Tushnet at Georgetown University, close watchers of the court. Jack Beatty's with us as well, On Point News analyst. Jack, good to have you.
Hello, Tom.
And we're joined right now from Austin, Texas, by Wayne Slater, senior political correspondent for the Dallas Morning News, co-author of Bush's Brain. Wayne Slater, thanks for joining us.
Tom, how are you?
We're well, and we're extraordinarily curious about this nominee, this woman, Harriet Myers. What more can you tell us? The slate looks awfully blank from our distance, Wayne. Fill in the picture.
You know, the slate is almost blank here, which I think is what this is all about. I can't tell you very much about her position on abortion, on gay marriage, on social issues at this hour. That wasn't something that she articulated here. But I do know, and have known her for years and have watched George Bush for years, she fits a certain mold. She's an absolute Bush loyalist. She's a political lawyer, never been on the bench. She's well-respected in the legal community in Texas, where she served as the president of the bar. At one point, she was, of course, the president's personal lawyer. And when he, as governor, took over the Texas lottery, which had its problems, he wanted to name someone who could clean it up, make it add some element of integrity.
Mm-hmm.
He picked Harriet. He sees her as a person of real integrity. She's a stickler for detail. In fact, what the president did, when he was governor, what he did was first, people don't know this, but he went and tried to hire the Archbishop of the Catholic Church in Corpus Christi to head the lottery commission, the oversight agency,
right,
to give the agency some integrity. The Archbishop sent the thing up to Rome. Rome said no. He then added instead Harriet Myers. So it really tells you what this governor, what this president thinks about this person, a person of integrity, a person of loyalty, a person whose job throughout her life here in Texas and more recently in Washington has been to legally protect George Bush.
She's at 60. She's single. I think never married, if I'm reading this correctly. A real career woman here, and he presented her as a woman who's hit a lot of firsts in Texas. Is she seen in Texas, in the Texas community, as a kind of a torchbearer for women in the legal world?
She is seen as a torchbearer for women in the legal world, yes, but especially for an approach to law. She did a lot of her firm's pro bono work and represented larger, more responsible, if you will, obligations of the legal community when working with the YWCA and various other groups. Now, whether that's, but she was never seen, ever, as a champion for women's rights, feminism, this is not who she was. On the other hand, there is no record at the moment, certainly that I'm aware of, that she was the opposite, that she was a strong anti-abortion person or worked against feminism in any way.
She was also a top commercial litigator for her firm, big firm there, representing Microsoft, Walt Disney Co. Amy Barrett, is it going to be possible to look into her corporate, commercial litigation background and begin to get a sense of how she'll deal with the very, very broad issues that she'll face on the court?
Well, I think it's always dangerous to look at someone's record in representing clients. I mean, lawyers are advocates, and any briefs that she filed will be a matter of, will likely be a matter of public record. However, I think it's dangerous to extrapolate from those briefs what Harriet Meyer's personal views would be.
And Mark Tushnet, here she is described by Wayne Slater in Texas as the absolute Bush loyalist, but she's being nominated to the Supreme Court, where she will have absolute independence, and George Bush will, within a few years, no longer be president. She will presumably still be on the court. What does it matter if she's a Bush loyalist then?
Probably the main point here to keep in mind is that this president believes and hopes that future presidents will believe in a very strong position for the president in our constitutional system. Having served as White House counsel, it's likely that Ms. Myers also holds that view. So in some sense, if that's the thing that matters most to President Bush, placing somebody with those views on the Supreme Court is in some ways the most important thing he can do. If the war on terrorism is going to be sustained through, you know, the next generation, and presidents in President Bush's view are going to have to take aggressive action, pushing the limits of some views of the Constitution, then it would be very helpful for those presidents to have a person who believes that the Constitution gives the president extremely great powers on the court.
Jack Beatty, watching her this morning, she seemed to look on, I don't know how to describe it, almost adoringly at the president as he made his announcement of her nomination. Mark Tushnet says support for presidential power might be at the center of what the president's thinking about here. But what an interesting political situation where on both the right and the left, you get an immediate sense that everybody's just a little bit stumped.
Stumped, and they may remain stumped through the hearings. I mean, she can parry questions about her White House service by pleading executive privilege. She can parry questions about her legal background by talking about lawyer-client privilege. And she can parry questions on judicial philosophy by essentially following John Roberts' position and saying, well, you know, these positions may come before the court. I can't commit myself. So what's she going to talk about? We don't know. I expect we will hear a good deal about her firm, Locke, Liddell, and Sapp.
Mm-hmm.
It is it's a major oil, gas, and energy firm. I count 30 major energy clients from Chevron to Marathon Oil, Shell, and so on. One of its fields is energy trading. Did it have anything to do with the Enron situation? We don't know. And of course, it doesn't hide the fact that it's pretty much an anti-labor firm. It's just straight out union organizing, discrimination claims, and so on. These put employers at risk, and we can help you. So there may be some issues there about labor clients, and then also it's a very big player in Texas. It has backed its principals have backed judicial contributions to people running for the Supreme Court in Texas. That's very controversial. And it's been a big player in Texas law.
Wayne Slater, what about that, the kind of coloring of this woman coming from that world? How much can could a U.S. senator, U.S. citizen read into that, looking at Harriet Myers as a candidate for the Supreme Court? Is there a deep stamp that comes from being a big-time Dallas corporate lawyer one way or another?
I think there is. And while on the one hand, Amy's right in saying that as a nominee on the court, appearing before the Senate, she might be able to say, I can't talk about some of these matters that may come before the court, and in some cases I may have represented the interests of clients, which may or may not be my own in corporate cases. What we do know here in Texas is in the late 1980s, early 1990s, she, Karl Rove, and a group of large business interests who were instrumental in the tort reform movement, the lawsuit reform effort in Texas, were very, very active. And she was very active in what was a process in which the state's judiciary at the top, Supreme Court, Court of Criminal Appeals, changed from all Democrat to now all Republican, and by some analysis, a court that is much more friendly to business interests against trial lawyers.
So she's been a player and right in there close and maybe soon on the Supreme Court. Listeners, we want to hear your view as well. 1-800-423-8255. Norma's calling from Reading, Massachusetts. Hi, Norma. You're on the air.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. You asked for a gut reaction. I haven't watched it on television, but just hearing it on our local WBUR, my first reaction was, I have nothing pro or con Harriet Myers. My fear is the way the president announced her nomination and the way he put it. One thing that stood out when he said she learned a lot from her mother and she knows the difference between right and wrong. And it does not set well with me because everything, she has been pro-Bush. She's very close there, and what I heard for the first time from you, the last speaker, the law firm that she worked for, nothing against her or even for her, but this appointee from Bush, I find it very, very troubling.
No, Norma, let me ask you, why would a nominee with a strong sense of right and wrong on the Supreme Court be disturbing to you?
It's not the fact that she does... It wasn't that she has the sense of difference, but the way the president put it, the way Mr. Bush put it, that she knows the difference. How does he know? He is always pushing the things about right and wrong and so much about morality that I don't think that how can I put it? It just went right against the grain.
So it seems like it may be edging into that realm of privacy and exactly what tone we expect from the court and what kind of coloring of interpretation of the Constitution. Norma, thanks for your call. Let's listen to President Bush talking a bit today about the fact that she has never been a judge.
I've given a lot of thought to the kind of people who should serve on the federal judiciary. I've come to agree with the late Chief Justice William Rehnquist, who wrote about the importance of having judges who are drawn from a wide diversity of professional backgrounds. Justice Rehnquist himself came to the Supreme Court without prior experience on the bench, as did more than 35 other men, including Byron White. And I'm proud to nominate an outstanding woman who brings a similar record of achievement in private practice and public service.
President Bush on Harriet Myers and the blank spot when it comes to experience on the bench. Of course, as he points out, William Rehnquist, the recently deceased Chief Justice, had not been on the bench. He was a top Justice Department official in the Nixon administration. Abe Fortas, influential Washington attorney, close advisor to Lyndon Johnson, was nominated in 1965. Mark Tushnet, how strange is it, 35 men over all the years of American history without court experience nominated to the Supreme Court, not so many in the modern era. Is this weird? Is this fine?
35, it's about a third, so a little more than a third, so it's, you know, it's not unusual. There's been a recent pattern of looking away from non-judicial experience, but probably that's a bad thing in my view.
Because?
Because the court deals with issues that involve the relations between the branches and the national government and the state governments, and its decisions affect ordinary people's lives. And judges can get removed from that, whereas actually somebody like the White House counsel has to have been involved in thinking fairly seriously about how the president and Congress are supposed to interrelate, or what legislation is good for, you know, states and what is bad for
the So you see it as a net plus that she does not have judicial experience?
I think probably yes, actually. Now, having somebody who's not a judge on the court, who wasn't immediately before that a judge on the court, seems to me a good thing. Whether she's the right person with that kind of background, we actually don't know enough, as everybody's been saying, to be sure.
Amy Barrett, what's your comfort level? From what you know of her resume at this moment and the lack of bench experience, does it look like a plus to you, like a question mark, like an area of concern?
I agree with Mark that I don't think a lack of prior judicial experience is a problem, and I think it's worth pointing out that not only have there been, you know, recent examples like Rehnquist and White, who did not have it, but, you know, Robert Jackson, who Chief Justice Roberts referred to continually as a model during the last confirmation hearings, did not have prior judicial experience. Indeed, Robert Jackson, on the TV shows this morning, some were raising questions about the fact that she went to SMU for law school. You know, Robert Jackson is, you know, one of our nation's most revered justices, and Robert Jackson actually didn't even graduate from a law school. He went to Albany Law School for 1 year and then got his law degree law certification through an apprenticeship.
When did he serve on the court?
He was an FDR appointee. He was in the 40s. Mark, do you know the precise dates?
41 through 54, I think.
Right, in the case of Robert Jackson. Wayne Slater, so we don't have the bench experience. That means looking at her life. And as Norma, our caller, says, certain things jumped out. The president was eager to paint a kind of picture here. There was a lot of talk about her mother today, her extended family, and his assessment that she was taught as a girl the difference between right and wrong. You're a political correspondent. How do you interpret these? This is code for what?
Yeah, I think I understand what the caller was calling about. You're right. She was afraid that this was code for an affection, or at least a sympathy for the attitudes of the religious right. At least that's what we've often seen from the Bush administration when he talks about those issues. But we don't see that with her. I see nothing in the record that she was active either for or against abortion rights or other feminist causes beyond just her involvement as a woman. And as a woman who has achieved in the legal profession. I talked to a close Bush associate today, who told me that this is not good news for the conservatives or for liberals. What he meant by that was this is not automatically someone who is going to make the right happy or make people on the left secure. In fact, his opinion, and I think the opinion of a number of people I talked to over the weekend, her name was around, was that as a legal mind, she may be lacking. She may not have the intellectual brilliance of a Scalia, but on the other hand, she represents the interests and has always the interests of George Bush. Is she able to leave that sort of narrow requirement and look in a larger sense in the court, or might she be led along as a lawyer by John Roberts and another faction of the court? That's yet to be known.
Jack Beatty, interesting, the idea of a Bush loyalist. I'm wrestling with this notion because, of course, once she's on the court, she has complete independence. In fact, it's expected that she will follow her own lead there. So how do you see that dynamic playing out?
Well, there again, we go back to Justice Jackson. John Roberts made the point that though he was appointed by FDR, he was FDR's attorney general, and as Attorney General, took a very expansive view of federal power in the Youngstown Steel case, ruled against President Truman on exercise of executive power. Will there be a Youngstown Steel case for her? We don't know. You can almost look at this as if Bush is appointing himself to the court. If it's true that their views are that close, that he's in effect her patron, at least at this level of law, that's like appointing himself. And will she be essentially what he wanted, or will she show independence? He did say the judges he most admires were Justices Scalia and Thomas. Is that the direction that she'll take? We just don't know.
Wayne Slater, I know we've got to let you go. It's been great having you. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
Wayne Slater, senior political correspondent for the Dallas Morning News, co-author of Bush's Brain. We're talking about the president's brand new Supreme Court nominee, Harriet Myers, and day one of a new era on the high court. You can join us. What is your reaction to the nomination of Harriet Myers? 1-800-423-8255 is the number. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Support for On Point comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, Bicon Dental Implants, offering short implants that can eliminate the need for bone grafting. Information is available at Bicon.com, B-I-C-O-N.com, and Private Wealth Management at Babson Capital. For more than 60 years, helping clients build and preserve wealth through financial planning, investment management, and trust services. In Cambridge and on the web at BabsonCapital.com.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the president's brand new Supreme Court nominee, Harriet Myers. Here she is this morning in the Oval Office talking about her respect for the founders and the Constitution.
I've always had a great respect and admiration for the genius that inspired our Constitution and our system of government. My respect and admiration have only grown over these past 5 years that you have allowed me to serve the American people as a representative of the executive branch. The wisdom of those who drafted our Constitution and conceived our nation as functioning with three strong and independent branches have proven truly remarkable.
Harriet Myers, White House counsel, George W. Bush confidant, and now nominee for Sandra Day O'Connor's seat on the Supreme Court, speaking this morning in the Oval Office as the president announced that nomination. You can join our conversation this hour. What will it mean to swap swing voter Sandra Day O'Connor for Harriet Myers? Do we have a clue? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've been joined this hour from South Bend, Indiana, at Notre Dame Law School by Amy Barrett, professor of law there, and from Washington and Georgetown University by Mark Tushnet, professor of constitutional law. Jack Beatty is with us as well. And right now, Mike is calling from Bedford, Massachusetts. Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Hi there. I was a little surprised to compare Harriet's remarks with Judge Roberts' first remarks.
Surprised in what direction, Mike?
Because Judge Roberts emphasized the stare decisis and the power of precedent, mm-hmm. whereas Harriet emphasized, pardon me for forgetting her last name.
Harriet Myers. We'll all know it well soon.
Harriet Myers' position is to adhere to the laws as set forth in the Constitution, and the two nominees in their initial comments were almost diametrically opposed in the way they approach the application of the Constitution and the law.
Yeah, and here we are right away micro-interpreting everything that comes out there, and understandably so. Mike, let us pick that up. Mark Tushnet, you hear Mike's instant analysis as we listen to Harriet Myers talk about the founders and the Constitution. I mean, there's all kinds of political signaling going on in an announcement moment like this morning. How much real substance did you hear being communicated in Ms. Myers' remarks?
Almost none, although this is not the time that you'd expect substance to be communicated. She had, you know, 30 seconds, a minute to say what she wanted to say, and all you could do is mouth what are basically platitudes about what a judge should do. Over the next few weeks, as people examine her record and as she testifies before the Senate Judiciary Committee, we'll have an opportunity to at least attempt to get some better sense of what she thinks about how the Constitution should be interpreted and so on.
Mark, broad stroke, can you walk us through the swing vote issues on which, if she replaces Sandra Day O'Connor, she will become the court's critical vote?
At the moment, there are probably three major issues that we could think about. The first and most prominent, actually, is the moment is campaign finance, where the Supreme Court was upheld the McCain-Feingold statute by a vote of 5-4, mm-hmm. with Justice O'Connor in the majority. They are going to hear a couple of important campaign finance cases in this term, and so the replacement of Justice O'Connor might make a difference. A second issue where Justice O'Connor was in the majority in a 5-4 context was affirmative action a few years ago. Mm. My own view is that the court's unlikely to revisit that issue in the next few 5 years or so. And so a Justice Myers, along with Chief Justice Roberts, probably is not going to change the law immediately. And then the final issue, of course, is abortion. And there, depending on how one counts and the issues that you think about, on some issues the court was 5-4, the unconstitutionality of the state partial birth abortion mm-hmm. statutes. Mm-hmm. That issue is coming to the court again. Justice O'Connor was in the majority in that decision. Justice Kennedy was in the dissent. On the what people call the core holding of Roe and Wade, the decision in 1992 or 93 was 6-3, and there the replacement of Justice O'Connor and Rehnquist is probably not going to make a difference on that particular issue. That is, in the short run, it's very unlikely that Roe versus Wade will be formally overruled.
Of course, when it comes to the Supreme Court and these lifetime nominations, the long run is ultimately what it's all about. Amy Barrett, in 1992, Harriet Myers was very active in a battle within the American Bar Association. She argued vehemently but unsuccessfully, ultimately, against a resolution supportive of abortion rights. Can we read into that kind of advocacy a position on abortion rights?
I don't know too much about that situation, but is it what exactly was Harriet's position there?
Well, she said it was inappropriate for the ABA to take a position on abortion rights when they were considering this resolution in support.
I thought she was arguing in favor of a referendum so that they would put it to the membership of the ABA. Was this when she was president of the Texas Bar Association?
Well, I don't have the full story at the moment. I'm looking at a summary of that here.
I mean, I see a difference. Let's see. If she was arguing that, I mean, that was a contentious issue at the time, whether mm-hmm. the ABA ought to have a position on abortion. And if she was arguing that it ought to be put to a vote in the ABA membership, I see that different than, you know, as arguing that the ABA ought to have the opposite position, say a pro-life position. So I'm not really sure what the parameters of her position were, but if it was about the process by which the ABA arrived, you know, at its position, then I'm not sure how much we could read into it.
Well, I'm sure we'll know all about it, and very soon. I want to turn to Washington right now. John Harwood joins us. He's national political editor for the Wall Street Journal. John, thanks very much for being with us.
No problem.
How are you interpreting this nomination, John? What does it mean?
I'm not sure what it means. I tell you, I'm very surprised by this choice. A lot of speculation that the president might make history by picking Al Gonzalez, and some conservatives were saying Al Gonzalez would have been the first Hispanic choice to the court, and some conservatives were saying, well, the qualifications aren't distinguished. That would be a pure sort of cronyism, ethnic pick. In Harriet Myers, you have somebody who might be vulnerable to a similar charge of undistinguished qualifications relative to other court picks, but without the history-making element. Now, you are replacing a one female justice with another, and so that has some certainly on the left would consider a progressive aspect to it. But her views are a blank slate, and she's somebody who really owes almost everything in her public career to President Bush.
John, put this in a broader political context for us. The president's taking some tough waves from a lot of angles lately, whether it's Katrina, the war in Iraq, the deficit, which has got a lot of people in his own party up in arms about his commitment to the old Republican contract with America. How do you understand this politically? Is this President Bush hunkering down? Does it open him to more criticism from the right within his party?
I think hunkering down is a good way of putting it, Tom. We don't know you know, some of the voices on the right who are very close to the White House came out very quickly and praised this nominee, but you look on some of the conservative blogs, they're underwhelmed by it. So it is not clear that she is going to be received as one of them. They just don't know enough about her. And Democrat, you know, one of the things interesting about her, in 1988, when the current president's father was running for the White House, she gave $1,000 to Al Gore when he was running for president, gave some money to the Democratic National Committee. So there are going to be things that people on the right are going to say, hey, wait a minute, what is she really all about? And as far as the left goes, I think they think, first of all, there's blood in the water concerning this White House. The president's weak, his poll numbers are relatively low, and they can interpret a blank slate as sort of a hunting license for really scrutinizing her very closely. I think if knowing everything we know at this moment, you'd say that it's likely that she'll be confirmed, but I don't think we can take that for granted.
Now, there is this, we're told that she was very much involved in President Bush's slate of nominees to the bench at many levels around the country during his first term, a rather controversial list, certainly at its margins, that was put forward then.
Mm-hmm.
Is she seen, John, as the driver in that or just a facilitator?
I don't think anybody viewed her. Now, at some point, we'll find out what White House insiders think in terms of her role in the process. But certainly outside the White House, I don't think she was perceived as the driver in that process. I think much more so the president himself and his views and people like Karl Rove, the political strategist, she was viewed more as a functionary. But we'll see. You know, one of the things that happens when you take somebody who is a staff person and give them a job as a principal when you don't know much about them is they make their own record. And we don't know what kind of a record she's going to make. You know, you remember when Dick Cheney, in a very similar circumstance, headed the
Vice Presidential Search Committee, yes,
for the president in the 2000 campaign.
Yeah.
Many people on the left liked that choice because Dick Cheney had been a genial member of the House, somebody that Democrats felt they could work with, and they've been surprised to see how conservative he's been as president, both on domestic issues as well as internationally. What kind of surprise is Harriet Myers going to have for us? We don't know.
Well, the president, when he was governor, I say again, called her a pit bull in size six shoes. So watch out. Marguerite's calling from Saugus, Massachusetts. Marguerite, you're on the air.
I have been a lawyer for over 50 years. Mm-hmm. I've represented the poor and middle class, ordinary people.
Mm-hmm.
Who used to sit in my office by the hour and pour out their souls and their problems and all kinds of things when we had plenty of time to give to everybody.
So what do you see in Harriet Myers?
And over the years, I became more and more and more sympathetic to the liberal causes, to the causes for the people, to the poor, to the underemployed, to the wages. She, on the other hand, has been working for a firm that represents large oil companies, big business industries over the years, and everybody says you don't become what you represent.
Hmm.
That I found that's not true at all.
You are what you eat, and she ate at the table of oil interest, you're saying.
What you hear, you are what you practice.
Marguerite,
you can't help but be represented. You can't help it.
We've got it, Jack. This speaks to your point about the milieu she's come up in.
Yes, Theodore Roosevelt, when he appointed Justice Holmes, said to him, well, I know you've had a lot of corporate clients, but you strike me as somebody who's got a heart beyond that. And I think Holmes showed that he did. And, I think if it comes to corporate lawyers, you'd have to pretty much wipe three-quarters of Supreme Court justices off the list just because that's the way things go in the law. Although I do share Marguerite's fear that perhaps this woman's, the company she's been keeping has in fact biased her views toward what they call in Texas business.
Business. Amy Barrett, how do you look at that? Here's the bulk of her career. President Bush pointing out she's done a lot of pro bono work, point taken. Yet here's where she's spent the focus of her life's work. Does that end up necessarily predetermining in some degree positions on the high court?
Oh, I don't know that I would say that it would end up predetermining in some degree. I think it is important to look at the whole package, whatever pro bono work she has. I mean, I don't know if it's significant, but if it is, then I think she would have exposure to some of the same kinds of issues that Marguerite is talking about having experienced in her own practice. But, you know, it is true that you would have to wipe out much of the court, you know, if corporate experience is a disqualifier.
Right. Off they would go. David's calling from Granby, Massachusetts. Hi, David. You're on the air.
Hi. It's good to talk to you.
Good to have you. What do you think?
My point is kind of a general one. It seems that presidents always have the advantage in these situations. I mean, when Roberts, before he went before the Judiciary Committee, he underwent hours of private interviews with White House staff and the president, and we'll never know what questions were asked and answered in those meetings. And by the same token, Harriet Myers has been living in Bush's back pocket basically for the last 15 years, and I can't believe that they never discussed issues of the day in a way that the senators on the Judiciary Committee investigating her will ever be able to ask her. Because
so you think the president knows exactly how she'll vote, but the Senate will not?
Exactly, and they really have no way of finding out, because she can just do a Roberts and say, this may come before me as a justice, and I can't comment on it.
We got it, David. Thanks for that. Mark Tushnet, how about it? Is a president free to ask the most kind of pointed questions about exactly how a nominee will vote? Is there a tradition against that? If it's a close confidant like Harriet Myers, do you presume that he knows how she'll vote on issues X, Y, and Z?
I assume that he thinks he knows. Whether he does or not is another question. I was struck. This may sound a little snide, but I apologize for that. I was struck by his saying that he knows her heart. I was reminded that he has also said that he had looked into Vladimir Putin's eyes and knew his soul. And it turns out that he was wrong about Vladimir Putin. And so, you know, he may be wrong about what he thinks he knows about Ms. Myers' heart as well.
Could be, maybe, a lot of independence for Supreme Court Justice. John Harwood, we've been sort of going around this issue of a Bush loyalist and confidant being nominated the whole hour here. How do you interpret that aspect of this nomination?
I think this president is somebody who values personal loyalty to a very, very high degree. It's why Alberto Gonzalez became his White House counsel. It's why he's the Attorney General.
But what does it mean beyond the courthouse door when you've got a lifetime appointment and the president will soon be out of office?
Well, it means the president, by virtue of having been around this person, can be confident that he's left somebody with values that correspond to his on the court. We don't know what that means in terms of specific court decisions, but remember, the president, when he was running, he didn't promise specific court outcomes. What he said was that he was going to support somebody who would strictly interpret the Constitution. He didn't explicitly call for Roe v. Wade to be overturned. So he can say legitimately that he is fulfilling what he promised. Conservatives may have interpreted it differently, and he may have wanted them to interpret it differently, but he's appointing somebody with his philosophical outlook to the court. I assume that he's ascertained what her outlook is by talking to her and having worked with her.
And now we'll find out what we can learn, but what an amazing moment. The swing vote, 5-4, so close, and a candidate, a nominee, with so little on the public record. We go forward with no little blindness here. John Harwood, National Political Editor for The Wall Street Journal, wonderful having you. Thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure.
And Amy Barrett, Professor of Law at Notre Dame. Ms. Barrett, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Mark Tushnet, Professor of Constitutional Law at Georgetown University, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And Jack, off we go. Another nominee, another day.
Yes, and we'll see what those hearings are like. It looks like she's going to go through. It's hard to imagine the Democrats filibustering this.
This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.